Hey everybody, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Here in WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing new ideas, concepts, a guest or two, help you lead a more positively minded life. Yesterday was Independence Day. Now, that's kind of an always interesting word, independence. We really think being independent is wonderful. We think that independence is very important. We are celebrating the breakaway from Britain. You know, and we said 1776, we were independent, non-dependent. So this becomes a big question today. I was looking at this and I was thinking about the fact that there are a certain number of people in the world who don't have that choice. Or they don't feel they have that choice. So I thought of two words, dependency. And I said, what's the opposite of dependency? And I said, is it independence? No. No. The opposite of dependency is autonomy. Then I played with the two words a little bit, and I thought about excessive dependency. And I said, excessive dependency, it's like you're in the deep end. See? The deep end. Excessive dependency is where you really lean on somebody else a lot, as opposed to autonomy. Now, let's talk about this when it becomes a little extreme. In the studio with me today, Linda Vanella. Linda, thanks for helping me in the research with this one.
You're welcome, Armand. I'm glad to be here with you.
Okay, so now we have a thing that they call the dependent personality disorder. However, let's take the word disorder out of it. And let's just say that there's dependency, and let's not think of it as a bad thing. There are some people who, when they hear that someone is dependent, it strikes the worst thing. You think of your mother being submissive to your father, or you think of, and there are people who get really angry at it. There are people I know who would like to have a relationship with somebody who is totally, regards them as God. And then there are other people who say, oh God, I couldn't stand it. So let's look at a little, what is this dependency? Personality, a dependence personality. What is that? And listen up, because this is, it'll help you if you observe it, but what you've got to do is try to eliminate the judgment. But it's characterized by an intense dependence on other people. That's what a dependent personality is. Intense dependent on other people.
It's a long-term chronic condition in which people totally depend on others to meet their emotional and their physical needs. People with this dependent personality see other people as much more capable of shouldering life's responsibilities, to navigate a complex world, and to deal with the competition of life.
So that's kind of interesting. They're dealing with the competitions of life. You just don't want to. To them, the other people are powerful. They're competent, capable of providing a sense of security and support. See, a dependent individual avoids situations that require them to take responsibility, not because they don't want to take responsibility, but they just don't believe they can. They look to others to take the lead. They tend to be submissive, right? And they're kind of stuck in the past. Now, this is an interesting thing about being stuck in the past, because they retain a childlike view of the people towards whom they feel totally submissive. Childlike view, like that other person is their good daddy or their good mommy. People with this personality characteristic look upon their people in an idealized way. And you'll be all right. If you're a dependent personality, you'll be all right as long as the person upon whom you depend is accessible. So how many times have we heard about cases of a person who says, you know, I'm really, they just have a wonderful relationship. I know one woman who had a wonderful relationship with a man, and she felt like he was going to take care of her completely, and he did. And then, of course, when he died, she was really in shambles. She really couldn't handle life. She went right to alcohol, and then she tried to turn it immediately to other competent beings, which is what the dependent personality does. If you know of people who have serial relationships, especially serial monogamy, it can usually suggest somebody who is a dependent personality who's just popping from one person to the next. I'll lean on you. No? Okay, you're no good anymore. You don't like me anymore. I'll go to the next guy or the next woman or the next one. So very often we think about these as addictions. But you see, it's kind of an addiction because it's a compulsion. What are you? You're somebody who's like, I was looking at a baby animal the other day of some kind. It was a baby turtle. And the baby turtle was separated from its mother somehow. And the baby turtle was going from place to place to find out, who's my mother going to be? See, and it just is going to attach itself to whatever you can. A lot of animals are like that. You know, a lot of animals, caribou babies are like that too. You know, if they can't find their mothers, they'll accept any mother that's around. You made a point before, Linda. You said made a point about how long we're dependent. What was that?
Well, naturally, within life, we have times when we are totally dependent, as in childhood and as in aged time as well. So that whole autonomy of us changes throughout our life cycle normally, so that there's a tendency of flexibility. And so therefore, the time that you're independent and dependent may in fact change at various times within our life.
You know, some of us, what you're saying is some of us have been dependent as babies. And then we become dependent as we get older. That's what I like. You know, they actually sell a product to the older people called Depends. You know, who picked that idea? Give that person a raise. Now, what if you were a kid and you never depended on anyone? What if you realized there was nobody to depend on? What if you realize the only person to depend on was yourself? What does that develop? Well, that develops narcissism. See, now you're your own god. Now you're the only person you could trust. Now you don't trust anybody, so that develops paranoia. Right? You can't trust anybody but yourself. You have to depend on yourself. And then what happens is because you're not sure of how strong you are, or because you don't have anybody to bounce off, you go out and you find a few dependent people. This is like the rock star with his, you know, with his group of people following him around and his groupies. It's like, you give me identity. So dependent personalities are very, very important because they make the narcissistic personality feel real, feel important. It's like you're a king and you want all your subjects to kneel before you so that you could feel like a king. Now, of course, everybody's screaming, oh no, you can't have this, it shouldn't be this way. But we don't live in a very sane world. We live in a world of imbalance. So let's look a little more at it, the self-image. Dependent people see themselves as inadequate and helpless, and then they perceive a cold and dangerous world and are unable to cope on their own. I see, you just got a picture in the Serengeti and you're a rabbit, a baby rabbit, right? Whoa, big world out there, it's dangerous, here comes an eagle. You know, he comes a fox. He comes, everybody wants to eat me up. What am I going to do? You become a nervous rabbit. You go look to bond with something immediately. So they turn their fate over to others when they can. In humanity, these individuals will decline to be ambitious, and they convince themselves that they don't have abilities, virtues, or attractiveness. Now, why? Because imagine if you make yourself attractive, somebody's going to come along and take care of yourself. But you convince yourself that you're not really attractive, so that you're always trying. Now, once again, you know, we kind of listen to this and we say, oh, I know somebody like that. It's terrible. It's horrible. It's horrible. It's not so horrible. It's one of the manipulations we have of the world. It's one of the ways we get by. The solution to being helpless in a frightening world is to find capable people who be supportive and nurturing. And without, you know, these protective relationships, dependent people tend to be self-effacing, agreeable, docile, ingratiating. They're the nice, nice people. Oh, she's so nice. Oh, he's so nice. What a nice person. Now, the one thing about the dependent personality is it generally does not turn your chemistry on if you're somebody who is looking for somebody strong. But some people perceive this weakness as vulnerability. And if you're not feeling very strong about yourself, you choose to be related to somebody who's vulnerable because it makes you feel strong and powerful. So there's a mate. So for every dominant, there's a submissive. You know, for every submissive, there's a dominant out there somewhere. And it's like, oh, I just want somebody who's strong. Says underneath it, because I feel out of control and I can't take care of myself. And I want somebody to take care of me. This is Armand DeMille with Linda Vanilla. The program is The Positive Mind here on WBAI. We're talking about dependency. And we're talking about it as we see it. We're talking about it because it was just July 4th. We just passed by. But I'm talking about it as a concept of a... that there's a whole group of people there who just say, I lean on you. I was listening to a song the other day. And I said, gee, let me see where I got that. I said to myself, I'm not really sure if Lean on Me is such a good song. Yeah, now it's always beautiful, right? This is always beautiful, right? Everybody likes this. You know, lean on me when you're not strong and I'll be your friend and I'll help you carry on. Gets carried a little too far out with this lean on me. I began listening to it and I was saying, wait a minute, what are we encouraging here? This is a very interesting thing. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Talking about dependency, not from a bad point of view. It's from just the way it is. A dependent person imagines themselves to be one with or a part of something more powerful. They imagine themselves to be the supporter of the more powerful being. The beauty of this is by seeing themselves as protected by the power of others, they don't get nervous. They don't feel helpless. They don't feel impotent. You see, I walk around feeling nervous, helpless, and impotent all the time. I had a little of that running through me almost every day. So does everybody else. But one of the ways of getting away from it is to be attached to somebody very strong You don't have to feel it at all. You don't have to be nervous. You know, my boyfriend's back, and he's going to... However, to be comfortable with themselves and their helplessness, individuals with this dependency have to deny the feelings they experience, and they have to deny their own deceptive strategies that they employ. They limit their awareness of both themselves and others. So here's the thing about a dependent personality. Introspection is nil. When you see it and you try to go with a dependent personality, they can't look at themselves. Now, one of the tools that I love, one of the things I love about life is being able to see myself. I'm one of the only animals in the world that could do that because, I wonder if dogs see themselves, a cat sees themselves, or anybody understands themselves and watches their own functioning. We have a privilege, we humans, have this privilege of being able to understand ourselves, understand why we do what we do, and even change some of the biological imperatives that come our way, that come included with us. We get a chance to change things. We don't have to hit somebody when we get angry. We don't have to, we could change our minds. But a dependent personality can't change their mind because they're not allowed to look. The problem is that you must stay blind with this, which leads you stuck in this place because you can't do anything about it. So the interesting thing is dependent personalities wind up going into therapy because so many things fail. And they're the best patients because they transfer that dependency to the therapist. And the therapist, of course, seeing this dependency coming their way, has one of two things. They say to themselves, well, I'll let this person depend on me because I need to earn a living and this will be a steady client. Okay, I'll go for that. At the same time, they say, but I'm going to teach this person autonomy. I'm going to point out to them how they work with their dependency. I'm going to show them their stuff about themselves. Well, the tendency here, of course, if you're a therapist, is not to do that. The tendency is to let the person depend on you, to be their hero, therefore keeping their dependency going. Physicians do that too. You know, a person goes to a physician and they say, I need help. The doctor says, well, you got a thing stuck in your thing here, and you're going to do this, and you take this medication, and you're going to be better. Real physicians would be telling people, let's go learn about this. I want you to look up on the internet thyroid and how it functions. Now I'm going to give you your blood test, and I'd like to show you where you are with this and what you can possibly do about it. If physicians were working at it, we would become less dependent. If tool makers, if builders didn't want this dependency, they would teach you how to wield your own tools. They teach you how to fix things. It's okay by me if you say to yourself, I don't want to be a fixer. I'd like to hire somebody to fix, but I know how to do it. But I don't want to spend the time doing it. So the autonomy, the idea of autonomy, is to choose to be dependent. But of course, with the dependent personality, it's not a choice. It's all you got. You feel like a scared rabbit. They have limited tolerance for negative feelings, perceptions, or interactions. And they have this kind of way of reinforcing their belief in themselves. Now, I'm going to ask you later to call in with your own stories about this, but the individuals with dependent personalities see relationship with significant others as necessary for survival. It's not just, I'm going to get by, you know. I've got to have a relationship. I've got to have love. It makes me question all these songs about if we only had love, then the world would prevail. But wait a minute, what if you don't have love? Can't you prevail anyway? If you don't have love in your life, can't you get by? They don't define themselves as being able to function independently. They have to be supportive relationships to be able to manage their lives. Very often you'll meet people in couples, and one person is an absolute how could I say it? They're just they're not nice people. And the other person is so, so sweet. Well, this sweet person is dependent on the not nice person. So when you look at that relationship and you say to yourself, well, how could they possibly be together? They feed each other. The narcissist is one way needs to be fed and will usually pick a dependent personality. They'll be more than meek and docile. They'll be admiring, loving, willing to give their all. They'll be loyal, unquestioning, and affectionate. They'll be tender and considerate to those upon whom they depend. Now notice these are not the feelings you have towards your parents. Because after a while you realize that one doesn't work because the parents don't give to you as much. So you try to choose a partner who needs you to be that way. Dependent people play the inferior role to the superior others very well. They communicate to the dominant people in their lives that they are useful, sympathetic. They let the other person know how strong and competent they are. If you've got a mother like this, you know, you're always kind of reinforcing them in some way. They get along with unpredictable or isolated people. Because they are so self-effacing in so many ways, they can get along with people that most of us can't get along with. What do they care if that person barks? It's all right. They can handle it. To further make this possible, the individuals with this dependency thing will approach both their own and others' failures and shortcomings with a kind of an attitude of indulgent tolerance. Well, that's the way it is. They actually make up phrases about it. Well, that's the way the cookie crumbles. They deny their individuality. Now, not only would individuals with this dependency subordinate their needs to those of others, but they'll meet unreasonable demands and submit to abuse and intimidation to avoid isolation and abandonment. That's it. Just do anything, but don't leave me alone. Don't leave me be here. What about you? Let me see if I'll ask you some questions. Which do you prefer? Some people enjoy making decisions. Others prefer to have someone they trust guide them. Which do you prefer? Make a note. You say you're an A or a B. You like enjoy making decisions yourself, or you prefer to have someone else, someone you trust, guide you? That's question one. Here's question two. Do you seek advice for everyday decisions? Are the decisions you make understood by you? Do you understand the decision you're making? But do you seek advice for everyday decisions? Are you about to make a decision? You say, I'm not sure. I don't know. What do you think? Do you find yourself in situations where people have made decisions about important things in your life? You know, what job you should take, they tell you. Right? What symptoms you have, they tell you. Is it hard for you to express a different opinion with someone you're close to? And what would happen if you think you do? If you did express an opinion, what do you think might would happen to you if it's hard? Is it hard to get started on a project? Do you have projects in mind and you just can't get started? You just can't get it going. Are you uncomfortable when you're alone? Are you afraid that you won't be able to take care of yourself? Very important question. Have you found that you're desperate to get into another relationship right away when a close relationship ends? Even if the new relationship may not be the best person for you? And do you worry about important people in your life leaving you? Do you? Are you afraid they're going to die? A lot of people have phobic reactions to the death of someone that they depend on. They're really worried. But the reason is not because they care so much of the other person. It's because they depend so much on the other person. I don't know how I'd survive without you. That's a big claim. You know, it's one of the things about love. You feel that when you're in love with someone. You sometimes feel that if you died, if the other person left you or died, you would be like, you couldn't possibly survive. Of course you could. Now, there's a guy named Theodore Millon. He looked at the dependent personality and he found five different types. I like this. He called one the disquieted dependent. And this one includes avoidant features. They're going to avoid getting involved. They kind of avoid life. They're afraid of making fools of themselves. Then there's the accommodating dependent, which very often includes this kind of hysterical nature. It's like the person who's always at loose ends, and they're going to turn to you to, you know, take care of me because I'm nervous, because I feel sick, because I'm worried, right? That's another form of dependency. Then there's the immature dependent, which is like, they're just like a baby, just like a child. You know, they speak like children. They look like children. Then I have known people who play this role in front of public, but don't play it in the secrecy of their house. I've known women who look totally dependent on a mate when they're in the outside world, but when they get home, they can run rings around him. They can control him and everything he does. So they're perceived this way by the outside world. Another of Millon's forms was called the ineffectual dependent, which is like no matter what you do, it comes out wrong. It's almost like your brain is wired wrong. And then there's the selfless dependent, which is the person who has absolutely no self. It's only me living for you. And that's all that I am. So this is Armand DeMille with you with the personality. You know, now, of course, we have to, it forces us to consider this other thing, which is called a codependent personality, which we're going to talk about when we get back from our break. But of course, we have wonderful music for you as well. One more question is just about the devoted personality style. The devoted personality style is the one that seems to be religious, and they subject themselves to religion in so many ways, and they bow their heads, and they accept God as all-powerful, and they say, I'm not. Now, AA helps with that. They say, you know, you must accept the bigger power. But when you become dependent on your religion for all your decisions, it's just another way of hiding the self, don't you think? Hey, we're going to be back with you in a little bit. By the way, if you TiVo or whatever you do, search the word home, H-O-M-E, they are rebroadcasting, I saw one last night, a new version of that movie called Home, the one with Woody Allen now is in it, and a number of wonderful movie stars that I participated in. It's just a great thing, and it's on. It's going to be appearing over the next month on a number of different stations, PBS, so on and so forth. I think if you just put the word home in your search engine, it'll come up, and you can copy it and take a look at it because it's so much fun. It's so good to see. This is Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind. We're here today, Tuesday and Wednesday. We're talking about dependency. We're talking about autonomy. And we're talking about what dependency is and is not. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, some remarkable music to get your dancing shoes on. And then we'll continue. I'll be right back.
Where would I be without you? Where would I be without you? I wouldn't know what to do. Where would I be without you? Gonna stick to you like glue. Where would I be without you? What kind of man would I be? What kind of man would I be? standing by me. What kind of man would I be? It's everything that you do. Where would I be without you? Am I feeling so good? You got me feeling so good. Maybe more than I should. Why am I feeling so good? Thrilled with all that you do. Where would I be without you?
That's the Good Times Guaranteed Blues Band. This is Armand DeMille with you with a positive mind. That's the way it feels. Where would I be without you? Let's talk about codependency a little bit. You know, this is the concept that came mainly out of AA. A dawning realization that that most problem is not solely the addict, the person who's got the substance abuse problem, but also the family and friends who constitute a network for the alcoholic or drug addict. It covers a way that a codependent person is fixated on another person for approval, substance, and so on. As such, the concept overlays with, but developed and mainly independent from, the older concept of the passive dependent personality. Because here you're attaching yourself not to a stronger personality, but to a misfunctioning or malfunctioning personality. And how do you do it? I can only tell you how often I've seen. I rarely see an addiction that stands by itself. There's always somebody who is supporting the addiction without even knowing it. It could be a mother, it could be a parent, it could be the judgment, it could be, I'm not going to lend you money, but you could live in my house. You can't have the keys to the car anymore, but I'll give you taxi money. You know, it's like you could just see in some way how the person and the addiction and the codependent are feeding each other. How are you codependent in a relationship? And you know the one thing that people can never see? The narcissistic personality could never see how they enjoy the codependent. They don't see it. They think it's almost like, this is what I deserve. This is what I have. What's the cure for most chemical disorders? Addictions. The cure generally is when somebody in their family who they value and love and need stands up and says, I'm going to leave you unless you straighten yourself out. And I got my bags packed. and I'm on the way out the door. That's generally the cure. Because it wakes up, you know, when you're an addict. When you're an addict, and I use that word loosely, but when you're compulsive about a substance, about sex, about anything, and it's dysfunctional and it's hurting your relationship, your best friend is the substance. Let's say you're an alcohol user and you drink. Alcohol is like one of these, it's your best friend. A shot of booze is your best friend. I've known alcoholics who hug their bottles of vodka. They live with them. They put them under their pillows. This is their best friend. Now, their mates come along, and their mates say, hey, would you get close to me? And they say, oh, sure, sure, sure. But their real buddy is the alcohol or the cigarettes or whatever it is, their marijuana, whatever it is. That's their real friend. So you're always in a menage a trois. You're always got three things. You got the relationship, you got the person, you got the addiction, and you got this codependency on your part. We're going to be taking your calls in just a minute. 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. So when you have this addiction, when you have this person with the addiction, sometimes if you face up to them, if you say, look, my darling father, I know you drink, but I'm going to ask you that as long as you drink, I will never talk to you. I am your daughter that you love, but I will not talk to you. The reason I won't talk to you is because I think you're killing yourself this way, and I will remove myself from you. I'll extricate myself because I think it's the only hope you have. Now, that may work. When a family gets together and they say, we're going to do an intervention, we're going to take this person to a place to dry them out or do something, it's that effect. But usually what really happens is the person lies a little bit and says, oh, I'm not drinking at all, or I'm not doing this, or, oh, he's much better today. And the denial that comes in from both people's parts, the addict's part and the person who's watching the addict. So a form of dependency is being related to someone who is not a dominant, but who is a dependent on substance or alcohol or addiction. Interesting stuff, don't you think? 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille.
Not yet.
Oh, not yet? Oh, it's good. The phones are open, so it's time for you to give us a call, my friends. If you're a codependent, sometimes you could say the following things about yourself. I have difficulty identifying what I'm feeling. Part of a sign of being a codependent and being a dependent is not knowing what you feel because your feelings are blocked from your own view. You see, they have to be blocked from your view. You're not allowed to see yourself because you're functioning on automatic. Or I minimize, I alter, or I deny how I truly feel. I can perceive myself as completely unselfish and dedicated to the well-being of others. Now, I have seen a lot of Mother Teresa's out there, people who feel like they are just dedicated to the well-being of others, but they're very self-effacing people. They're people who serve because they believe they have no power. It's different than serving from power. I lack empathy for the feelings and needs of other people other than that person upon whom I'm dependent. So if I see people who are in pain, I avoid them. And then comes this judgmental quality. I label others with my negative traits. Now, the very interesting thing about dependent personalities is how negative they could be, how sour they could be, how judgmental they could be about everything. 212-209-2900, by the way. I mask my pains in various ways. And I could, different ways of wearing masks, you know, one way is to make light of everything, to make humor out of everything, or to isolate yourself. Separate yourself out so that nobody could find you. or to get angry all the time, or to make fun of it. I asked someone today, I said, what would happen if you questioned him? It was a woman who was worried about a future relationship. She's got a relationship with a guy. I said, what would happen if you asked him? She said, he would make a joke out of it. I said, what do you mean make a joke? He makes a joke out of every uncomfortable question.
Ready.
Let's take a call. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
I am going through the same situation with my daughter.
What's happening with your daughter?
She's drinking too much for my liking.
It's very difficult. Very difficult. And she lives with you?
Yes.
And how old is she?
31.
She's 31 years old and living with you in the Lower East Side of Manhattan?
Right in Midtown Manhattan.
Midtown Manhattan.
She's been trying to get out, but she doesn't want to leave Manhattan. And, you know, the rents.
Okay, so you see the way that just happened?
Yes.
That's what codependency is. You believe this story. She's trying to get out, but the rents are too high and you can't leave Manhattan. And so now there's a story that's developed. And both of you collaborate on this story. Now, have you been to Al-Anon?
No.
Okay. Do you know what Al-Anon is?
Not really.
Okay. Let me help you with that. It's an organization. Alcoholics Anonymous is an organization that's very effective at helping people stop drinking when they're drinking. They're very effective. They have a sub-organization called Al-Anon, which is for the family of the people who are drinking. And it's a great organization in many ways because they have mutual support. If you look up Al-Anon in your neighborhood, you will find meetings that you could go to that will help you a great deal in dealing with this.
Okay.
What's your name?
Yvonne.
Yvonne, it's hell to live with. Now, if she's 31 years old and drinking heavily, does she bring men into your house?
No.
So if she's seeing somebody, does she stay out all night?
Yes.
So you get even worried about her well-being.
And I worry, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry, Yvonne. I'm so sorry. It must make you crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Was there ever a mate in the house? Was there ever a father?
My husband is in the house.
He's in the house with you. So you got you and your husband. How does he feel about your daughter's drinking?
Well, you know, he has a few family members that have been alcoholics, and he keeps telling me that there's nothing that I can do until she sees what she's doing.
Yeah, all right.
And I can't deal with it. I mean, he's able to deal with it, but I can't.
So get yourself to a meeting, and maybe he will learn as well. It's really quite remarkable. And in Midtown Manhattan, there are some really beautiful meetings. And by beautiful, I mean the people who go are just extraordinary people.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Armand.
Sure.
Okay, bye-bye.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi, my name's John.
Hello, John.
Hi, Armand. How are you?
Good.
Good. Armand, I have a question. I'm actually a friend of Bill's. I've been in a program for close to 8 years.
A friend of Bill's?
Yes.
Which Which Bill?
Bill Wilson.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway, I actually have been on both sides of the fence with what you were just in, speaking about on the air as far as the pain, dealing with the pain and dealing with it raw. I had gotten into a relationship with somebody who was on again, off again drinking, and it's been very taxing. And I'm now getting into therapy with a doctor over in Valley Street. It was recommended to me through someone in the program. And I thank God for that because I used to drink, and I used to drug, and I used to smoke cigarettes. And
what effect did your family or friends have on you when you were in the height of your thing and they were just trying to help you out?
Well, actually, my family, my mom passed away last year. My dad passed away 10 years ago. And when my mom passed away, my brother is kind of detached. It's been very difficult. You know, I unfortunately didn't get the support that I was hoping to get from my family in recovery. So it's been difficult, you know, as far as dealing with it. I deal with the pain daily. But thank
God. All right. Now, do you think they could have supported you better than they do?
Well,
or do you think their non-support of you helped you get yourself straight faster?
Well, you know, I actually got sick and tired of being sick and tired, and
I like that.
Choice. Okay, so as far as my family, I do think they do say it's a family disease. You know, so you know, I have one brother who's unfortunately still active. Now, you know, we can't really cast aspersions on people, so. I have to be careful, you know, but I'm just it's been a lot. I have on one hand I have my family who's detached, and I was told to just let it go. So you know, I've always had a problem with that with my family, and I believe in family. I mean, in a closeness to the family. You know,
John, let me ask you a question.
Yeah,
do you feel that you're lovable? Think about that before you answer it. Before you answer that, okay? Do you think that you're a lovable being?
That I'm a lovable being?
That you're lovable.
Yes. I do believe that.
What part of you should be cherished by somebody else? What is it about you that's lovable?
Well, I have a caring nature. I do have a you know, concern for people. A lot of things have happened though that I'm starting to now. You know, I see things different, and sometimes you know, like a therapist I had gone to earlier, I told me that don't care about so much for people that really don't really care. You know, that aren't worthy of that. You know what I'm saying? There are some people that I do, and maybe that's a problem.
You see, John, I think that what I'm hearing in you is that you believe you're a broken toy. You believe some part of you really doesn't deserve this caring for that you're searching for so hard. And that makes it twice as hard. But what I also hear is a very sensitive man who has evolved past his family dictum. You know what I mean? You have a family of people who have alcohol problems, and you're fighting like hell to save your life and your future generations. You know? So I hear this brave, insightful man who, on your own, John, just the way you are, you're a very lovable man. If somebody comes along, however, who loves you with your addictions, that's a problem, because that's not what you're looking for. So what you're going to get as you get yourself free is somebody who's going to love you as you are. And you certainly deserve it.
Thanks, Armin. I had this relationship of somebody who did love me as I am. However, this woman also, she drank. And there were times where she wouldn't be as fruitful as I would hope her to be.
Yeah, it's tough. It's difficult.
No.
It's difficult when you're both involved in it. Thank you very much for calling in, John. Thank you.
Thank you, Armin. Take care.
Bye-bye. I forgot when I said I'm a friend of Bill's. I was just with my friend Bill Astwood yesterday, and I said, oh, he's a friend of Bill Astwood's. But that's a code word for I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, this is Armand DeMille.
Yes, hi, Armand. Hi. I've called a long time ago. My name is Kevin May. I live in New Jersey. But I mirror what the guy was saying about the more you get healthy, either through AA or personal counseling, you find yourself not your family, the dynamic changes. And I'm going through that right now, and I'm accepting a lot of truths. And it's sad. It's making me sad that my family doesn't understand me anymore. But I come from an abusive alcoholic family, 13 children. I've lost three brothers to alcoholism. There's a mental illness, schizophrenia. And I'm just trying to live my life right now. And it's sad, but there's nothing I can do about it.
Well, there's a lot you're doing about it, Kevin. I mean, the fact that you're saying, I am going to get past this, I'm going to live my own life, this is a generational change. You're making a remarkable shift in what should have been a doomed life. You're a hero. You know what I mean? I mean, this is not, I don't want to put you up on a pedestal, but it is remarkable what your spirit is able to do. How did you get through this? How did you be one of so many children with so many dysfunctional people around you, dragging yourself on your elbows and your bloody knees trying to get through life? How do you get to the point where you're still fighting for life and not succumbing?
I know. I've always had a spirit, and I've always known that. And I'm bipolar, and I spent 30 years of my life addicted to drugs, not because I liked the drug, but I was trying to transfer one pain to another. I was just responding and trying to manage my bipolar. But I always, my main thing throughout my whole life and my addiction was, you know what, tomorrow might be a better day, so let me hang around and let me see what happens tomorrow. And that was always my mantra. And life took me through a lot of changes. I was out of my home at 20, and I was working, feeding exercise. I didn't know what the hell I was. My father never taught me for life. He never taught me how to manage money or how to pay bills.
So well, you get right to the really point, because that's really true, Kevin. You see, the survivors never really had a father.
Yeah.
And therefore, you got to make it up on your own. And some people make it up by copying other people, and they copy the wrong people. And then there are people like you who are like these, you know, broken birds who kind of walk along and they say, I'm going to get through this. I'm going to get through it. I'm going to get through it.
And also, I have a great wife. She saved my life. I have to give her a big prop. She saved my life at 30 when I was having a major manic episode. She really found me a great doctor, got me the right medication. And it's taken me 7 years to get here, where I am now.
What is your wife's name?
Kathy Yoakum. She's acupuncture in New York City.
Kathy teaches acupuncture in New York City?
Yes, she's a sweet lady. She's beautiful.
So if Kathy could hear you through the ethers right now, and since you could replay this at any point, what would you like to say to her directly right now?
I'd like to say that, you know, I'm totally grateful for her.
Say it to her directly. Say, honey, I'm totally grateful to you.
Honey, I'm totally grateful to you. She's sitting right here.
I wish you didn't say my last name.
but she's very modest.
It's great to hear you both laughing.
Thank you, Emma.
Sure.
I love your show. Thank you.
Just say hello to Kathy for one quick second.
Yes, for one moment.
Hello?
Hi there, Kathy.
Hi, you're like one of my favorite people in the world. I've learned so much from you, and you just, I was so sad that when you weren't on as much on VAI, but I listen whenever you're on, and I can't tell you how much. Actually, I've talked to you once before too.
I hear.
But I really, really think that you're a gifted, talented, amazing man. You share so much with so many people, and I just feel so grateful to be able to listen to you.
Thank you, Kathy. Thank you. We've got to get going. I'll be on tomorrow, again at 1 p.m. My love to both you and Kevin. Give each other a hug and imagine I'm in the middle.